Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gawaza, and for today, we're talking around, funding startups, but not just any startups. We're talking about startups that are being, founded and somewhat incubated within the university context. I'm quite looking forward to hearing what's going on this front. And to help us to unpack some of the issues, we are joined by Wayne Stocks, who is a partner at the University Technology Fund, together with Professor Risha Pretorius, who is from BioCode. Now, the UTF, or the University Technology Fund, has raised about 230 million rand and has invested in about 5 companies that have developed technologies in biosciences and biotechnology, together with health and medical diagnostics and energy industries. And we're just going to be hearing just around some of the initiatives that they have going on and maybe the models that they have to go. So I think a good place to start. Greetings to you all.
Good morning.
I will start on the side of the University Technology Fund, maybe get a sense from Wayne. Could you give us some insight into the fund? What is it all about? How many universities are involved? Is it government? Is it private? How is it working?
Sure, and thanks so much for having us here to share the good news. So the University Technology Fund is a venture capital fund, and our mandate is to commercialize intellectual property technology that's originated from South African universities. And that what that practically means is us as fund managers, Stocks and Strauss, work hand in hand with the technology transfer offices within the universities. And we apply our venture building skill and expertise and capital to further develop and commercialize tech projects and tech companies. And these tech projects or companies could have been started by scientists, researchers, professors, or even students working with the faculty within the universities. And so when we started the fund, it was really catalyzed by an anchor investor, the SA SME Fund, with the University of Stellenbosch and the University of Cape Town coming on board and providing co-funding commitments as well. So the majority of the initial capital was earmarked towards Stellenbosch and University of Cape Town projects and intellectual property. Mm-hmm. However, the mandate allows us to invest in all 26 university intellectual property and technology. And having since raised a little bit more money, this has allowed us to actually now actively go and pursue opportunities at these universities.
Could we get a sense of how big that fund is? Because just now when we began the conversation, we spoke about having raised 230 million. Is that the entirety of the pool?
Yes, 230 million at this point, and that includes 20 million co-investment commitment from Stellenbosch and 20 million co-investment commitment from UCT. That 230 million includes that. So what we actually haven't done, the fund was only started on the 31st of Jan of this year. And because this asset class is not really known in South Africa, internationally it's massive. But what, as fund managers and initial investors, what we decided to do is really try and add some tangibility and understanding to what type of technology is coming out of the universities. And so our focus was really to make some solid investments up front, and we believe we've really done that. And then so the first quarter of next year, we're really going to start to engage with qualified investors in South Africa to increase the fund size, because there are so many great opportunities out there.
Okay, cool. I think just one more follow-up before we hear from Prof is to maybe also, can you talk to us about how you guys decided the specific areas within technology that you guys were going to actually focus on?
Sure. And so we're very lucky that our fund mandate is roughly termed technology. But that encompasses everything. It encompasses what we think of digital technology when you open your phone. But it's everything that has some form of intellectual property. And that's what the universities are really good at. And that's what we think is a major competitive advantage. So where else do you find labs and laboratories and, you know, 10 scientists, 100 scientists working on a particular problem for 10 years with grant funding. You know, you don't find that in the private sector. So, you know, I think the strength of a lot of our universities is really, you know, around some of the biotech stuff, the medical diagnostic devices. We do have some digital platforms and some of the engineering projects we've seen coming through as well. So, you know, I think that's the strength of the universities is all these brilliant minds working together across multiple disciplines and having the freedom to really explore research, which, you know, in the private sector you wouldn't be able to do.
I'm just going to bring in Prof here and maybe get a sense. BioCode, I understand you guys believe in a world where the cure actually lies in prevention. Can you give us some insight on that front?
Yes, thank you very much for the opportunity. So yearly, many thousands of man hours are lost due to cardiovascular-related conditions. And during the time of this podcast, 4,500 individuals will have died from cancer and probably another 8,000 from cardiovascular disease. From a business perspective, that has a direct monetary impact. However, it should be kept in mind that these diseases are present in individuals long before the individuals actually present with disease. And it is in this space where BioCode Technologies from Stellenbosch University has a unique niche.
And in terms of the founding of the startup, the company, how did that come up?
So researchers from the University of Stellenbosch Departments of Physiological Sciences, as well as engineering, started working together probably in 2017 when we embarked on research projects to build nanobiosensors to detect inflammatory molecules in the blood. And these molecules we call biomarkers. So the presence of these inflammatory biomarkers can be used for the early identification of disease risk, and that is where BioCode Technology focuses on. So from our endeavors, and with the help of INUFIS, which is our Stellenbosch University Technology Transfer Office, as well as funding from the UTF and various research grants, BioCode Technologies was founded in 2019. And our vision specifically for BioCode is to transform the healthcare market with our innovative biotech solutions. And we aim to empower people and also to improve lives.
One more follow-up from me, Prof, on that front is, how did you guys, you know, decide to actually step out and do something like this? Because I think in South Africa, we have this perception or, you know, just the idea that academics tend to be people that, you know, bury their heads in research, publish papers, attend conferences, journal articles, probably advising the government or private sector on the latest developments and the like, but actually striking out on your own and actually, you know, deciding to commercialize some of the research, at least from a university point of view, isn't a path that's gone down often by a lot of academics. So what actually gave you that impetus, especially, you know, walking off such an unusual path?
Absolutely, and that is one of the main problems and issues that we have in South Africa. But luckily, in Stellenbosch University, our researchers are really very lucky to have in INUFIS, our technology transfer office. And these individuals working under the leadership of Anita Nell goes out to our researchers and actually tries to ask where they can be involved to try to commercialize products. So with the help of Anita and INUFIS, and then also this wonderful initiative of the UTF, it really now makes life much easier for researchers to go down the route of commercialization. As you rightly pointed out, researchers focus on publishing research rather than creating patents from it. And that's a university mindset that we have to change and we have to work on to accomplish that. But with funding also being a real problem in South Africa, it is such a nice opportunity to work with the UTF. And then also the idea would be to form strong partnerships with business and with private sector to try to commercialize research from Stellenbosch University and going through biocode technologies in specifics. So it is just a wonderful opportunity for all researchers that the UTF Fund was created.
Wayne, your take on changing some of these perceptions, and also whilst you're answering that, someone listening might be asking why it took so long to actually start something like this in 2020, why this hasn't been something that was existing, pre-2020.
Yeah, I think your question cut down to a lot of the core of it, and Risa really touched on it as well. I think the two most important things here are not geared towards pushing commercial opportunities out of their framework. And the individuals within them don't have a lot of commercial or market experience. And then there was lack of funding in the post-research side, so the development and commercialization side. So there are billions of rands that are getting spent on research. So our research bucket is extremely strong. South Africa performs very well in patents, writing papers, as you mentioned. But there's a trickle of small businesses and commercial licenses that appear. And that's largely because the funders don't understand the space and the risk, and don't have the risk appetite to get involved, and largely because often and more likely than anything, it's the researchers that either don't want to actually commercialize it, or don't understand how to, or don't even want to be a part of a potential spin-out. So we do find in some of the opportunities that we're funding that the core researchers may stay at the university. So they've developed this core IP and they've patented it or this diagnostic device, and they may not actually join that spin-out company full-time. And so we actually, as fund managers, then look to say, where can we potentially find entrepreneurs or a network of individuals who can come on board and actually take this business forward? And so that's part of the process of when we're doing a due diligence, is to actually look at the team and say, other than the science or other than the core technical aspect of this team, is there someone that actually can run this as a business? Is there someone that actually is market orientated? And that has been a challenge at times. But we do have the technology transfer officers that work with us very closely. And in Stellenbosch, they're lucky to have the Launch Lab, which incubates startups out of Stellenbosch and other startups as well. And they provide the framework for teams to really look commercially. And to your point about why hasn't this happened, Anita Nell, who runs Nerfus, she's tried this for many years. However, just couldn't find an anchor funder. It's difficult because you couldn't put numerous universities together. So for one funder coming in and saying, well, I'm only funding projects out of one university, that's quite a strict mandate. How do we do this? And so Ketso Gordam of the SASME Fund, saw this as a major opportunity. If you look internationally, this is a huge asset class. If you just have to look to the likes of Oxford and Cambridge and MITs and Stanfords of the world to see what that's done for them over the past decade. And so SASME Fund came in and said, hey, we're willing to put down money. Let's try and get at least two universities to commit. And UCT and Stellenbosch then came together. And since then, we've got other universities on board. However, our mandate does include investing in all 26 universities. So it just was a meeting of minds, really.
I've actually met Ketso, before, and he seems very, gung-ho from the SASME Fund when it comes to technology projects and actually investing in things that otherwise, would have been left, underutilized. So I can definitely understand the need to have, some of those backers that will be there, proponents that can actually, come to the table, bring the funds, and actually, take these things forward. But this one I want to get the take on both sides. How does the intellectual property side work? Prof, I'll start with you, because if you're working in a university laboratory, but at the same time you're trying to commercialize part of your research, does the university have any stake in whatever, you know, commercial rewards you might reap down the line because the project started, you know, using probably university equipment, laboratories, premises and the like? You know, how do you guys navigate that part? Because I think for, you know, people who are within the academic spheres, this might be a question that they might have.
Yes, absolutely. And therefore, it is strongly guided by a specific set of rules and guidelines set out by NRFIS right from the start. So the researchers know exactly what is involved and how it works. So an example, as you mentioned, many of the research that is produced within the universities, because of the university setup and how we typically do research, the main guidance for us is that we would want to publish as soon as possible. However, if we look at companies and patents and commercializing research, then researchers sit in a very difficult position because they want to build their CVs as publications, and actually you cannot, your research cannot be published and open in the open space out there for everyone to see it, to be able to commercialize it. So it's a fine line for a researcher to walk, deciding whether to publish or rather to patent. So if one starts to go via the patent route, then the university, and Stellenbosch University in particular, have a very strong team of patent attorneys that assist researchers then to write their research into a form of a patent and patent it as soon as possible. Now, from a personal point of view, I could just perhaps say that about 2 years ago, we discovered a possible molecule that could be used for treatment of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And obviously, I wanted to publish that as soon as possible. And with Anita Nell in NRFIS and the patent attorneys, they literally helped me to write up the patent within a week or two, so that we filed the patent and then I could send off the publication. So it's just a question of timing, and it's a question of information of how it works, that the patent attorneys as well as in NRFIS or the technology transfer offices in other universities must just work very closely together with the researcher, so that the researcher can still reap the benefits of their research via publications and also then patent novel discoveries. Now, importantly, you asked what will happen, how does it happen when you want to commercialize various patents and work in the university laboratories. So in biotechnologies, we license our research endeavors, whatever happens in our laboratories, if it is usable as a commercial product, we license that commercial information or product or development to biotechnologies, so that the university still owns part of the IP together with the researchers. And obviously there's set rules how to navigate past who gets what. But then that the commercial companies, the startup companies, may actually have full benefit of what happens in the university. Now, you can appreciate that Stellenbosch University is one of the top universities in South Africa and Africa. And we have access to brilliant young minds and state-of-the-art equipment. And that filters through then via these very clearly defined processes to biotechnologies, which is a startup company on its own. And there as well, the UTF plays a very important role, where funding from the UTF then assists Biocode to, with these patented commercial products coming out from the university and into Biocode, that we can indeed take it to a commercial product.
Wayne, your take on this one, and especially as UTF, how do you guys navigate that intellectual property debate? And at the same time, from everything that Prof is saying, it really sounds like someone really does need to be clued up on how all of this actually works. So do you find that you guys have had to take on that role where you sort of become an educator of sorts?
Yeah, luckily we do work with all the different technology transfer offices very closely, and every university is slightly different with regards to the policies of ownership and how a spin-out company or licensing agreement may work. So typically, if a spin-out of a university comes along, there's two ways of getting the intellectual property into that company. It's either via an exclusive license, as Rusio mentioned, or the intellectual property is actually ceded over to the company. Now, as an investor, I always want the founders or the brilliant minds or the technologists that have discovered this to be incentivized. So you always want them to have a nice piece of the pie, so they are incentivized. You never want to dilute founders too much. But it's also in our best interest to have the university have a stake in this as well. So they're aligned. And then by default, as Risa mentioned, if you've got the university holding a stake, you've got the founders or scientists or researchers holding a stake, and us as the funders, initial funders coming in, taking an equity piece. If the university continues to have a significant equity stake, what happens is any research that is value accretive to, you know, the business will continue to flow through into the company. So you've actually got a whole R&D piece as part of the business that is paid for by either the university or grant funding, which is a major benefit as a funder. So often we walk in as funders into an opportunity and go, hey, here's some amazing intellectual property that's been developed over 10 years. It's been funded by 50 million, 100 million rands worth of grant funding, whatever it may be. We come on board and we help them commercialize that. We help them package it. We help them look for a market. And we then take an equity piece and we help fund it. But we've got the advantage of all this value coming through that has been funded by grants which are not on the balance sheet. So we really do get into a really favorable position as funders. But it does take a lot of work and there is high risk. But to your point, from an education perspective, we play the role of this is how companies and funding works. This is what we need to really be focused on. And if you think of technology, team, and market as the three kind of core pillars of any type of investment, the market side is often very lacking, and that's where we come in and help through our expertise and networks.
As a follow-up to that one, as the UTF, you guys did start this year, so there hasn't been as much. You guys are about to clock in a year. In terms of the journey of a startup, there are a lot of different phases, conception, actually, you know, coming up with the minimum viable product or, you know, a prototype of some sort, proof of concept, actually deciding how do you go to market, you know, looking for funding, etc. How far, you know, in the firstly, where do you guys, you know, hope to begin? Because, you know, I know investors tend to have their preferences, either early stage or, you know, post revenue, all of these things. Where do you guys like to start, and, you know, how far do you think you can sort of take a startup in that journey?
The South African venture capital environment tends to sit at the far end of the commercialization spectrum. So as you correctly said, you know, it's kind of post revenue, and that's traditionally that's as you classify internationally as private equity, really. But that's typically where the South African venture capital players tend to sit, being quite risk averse. The cornerstone fund is SASME fund. You know, saw the need that, you know, we need to go just post research into the development side, to dip our toe in there to really help with that type of funding, and then go all the way to the commercialization stage. And so how our fund mandate is written up is we are able to provide funding, although relatively a smaller piece of the funding, at the just kind of at the end of research and into development side. And then we really focus on the development and the commercialization stages. And so we actually fund all the way, and we dip our toe a little bit into the research and then into the development stage, and then very much into commercialization, which is termed Series Seed and Series A being post-revenue. So our fund can take it all the way to post-revenue, and that's where our mandate will stop. And that's why it's so important for us to either co-invest and also to form strong ties with other venture capital entities or private equity entities in South Africa, as well as industry, because there will be some funding that's required post where our mandate ends. And that's a key consideration for us when we look at opportunities, is to say the UTF is a 10-year fund. Can we, if we invest in this right now, will it be able to get to the point where we can exit within the next 10 years at a favorable outcome? And so that's something which can be quite a tough decision in our investment decision framework.
Prof, I'm going to bring you in here maybe to get a sense of BioCode and some of the work that you guys are doing. At what stage are you guys at when it comes to, you know, commercializing some of the work that you guys have?
So BioCode is a very young startup. We are just, as I mentioned, a few years into looking at making our nanobiosensors. And here, Wayne and Stockton Strauss, the fund managers, and the UTF really played a fundamental role. Because Wayne mentioned toe dipping into research, and that is exactly what they did. They provided us with really that funding that allowed us to see if we can indeed commercialize our product. Our research team, as I mentioned, is very strong. All of our researchers in the team has got over 100 years of collective research experience. However, as you might know, and as Wayne mentioned, to really get our minds as researchers around what happens during a process of commercialization, it's not within our environment. We needed to learn a lot, and here is where definitely Stocks and Strauss, the fund managers, helped us, as well as the UTF fund, because they really walked the road with us the past year, and they led us to think about processes and to think about business plans. And, you know, so we are really walking the road with them from the first step of early product development. And I think most importantly, we would not have been able to do that within BioCode if we did not have the experience of the UTF fund managers, as well as in WIFIS and the Launch Lab, who literally took the researchers by the hand to lead us through this process. So we believe we will have a commercial product within the next 1 or 2 years. And with various stages, as Wayne mentioned, there are various stages of funding involved that we can apply for, and we are now in the process of applying for our second round of funding to the UTF, which we hopefully will receive early next year or by March or so. So it's a long process, and the most important thing is it is very well regulated by the UTF fund, by INWIFIS, by Launch Lab, and everyone has to play their roles to commercialize products.
Now, we certainly hope that, you know, things go the way that they're meant to, in the coming year, as you said. As we round up the discussion, Prof, you know, throughout this process, are there any things that have, you know, perhaps sparked your interest, things about, the commercialization process that have, pleasantly surprised you, that you didn't actually know going into all of this?
Yes, definitely. I was very much surprised at the amount of time researchers must spend to actually understand business and the market that they want to penetrate. And that was an interesting concept that I haven't thought about before the time. And Wayne and Danielle Strauss, his partner, constantly reminded us that we must find our niche market and we must find out where business would want to get involved and who will be our market and in which areas of the market our traction will be. So that is quite an experience for us. And it's actually very nice to go out there and find the market and talk to other businesses like insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies, as well as companies that are just interested in wellness of their employees. So that was a pleasant surprise, but also a very nice surprise for us.
Wayne, you have the last word on this one. Your outlook, things that you're excited about going forward.
Sure. I mean, I'm just saying the importance of this to the country, and you know, and to the private equity side as well. So not only from our institutions, but from to grow the private equity ecosystem, because this is such a huge opportunity. You can't have tens of billions of rands annually going into research and nothing commercial coming out of it. That's a wasted opportunity, and it's not sustainable. And the amount of the jobs and the commercial value that this could create and we believe will create is extremely interesting and exciting. So we're looking to we've almost made our sixth investment, but our six current portfolio companies to success. But we also look forward to raising more money into the fund so we can really get to all the universities in South Africa and make a difference to them and to the communities and that that they serve and can serve. So thank you.
So that's been us. We're with Wayne Stocks, who is a partner at the University Technology Fund, together with Professor Risha Pretorius from BioCode. And she's also part of the University of Stellenbosch. Now, it's been an interesting show, and they were talking to us about what's going on in universities in terms of the startup space, actually taking research and finding ways to commercialize it. And Prof actually went into quite some detail about some of the mindsets and some of the struggles that, researchers face. And I like what she said at the end, talking about the fact that, she was actually surprised about how long it takes, researchers to actually identify and understand, the business part, of things. And also, just talking about, the intellectual property considerations, it really seems that there's a lot of rules that have to be adhered to, but as long as there are rules in place, then that is a good thing.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
A very fascinating discussion about startups within the university context, and a very important conversation, because we do have a lot of people in tertiary institutions that probably have a lot of good ideas, both on the student and academic staff level. But, of particular interest, for me, because in the United States and other parts of the world, it is not unusual to hear that people came out of, Harvard, Stanford, MIT, etc., and went on to build a company. That seems to be like a common thing, common story that we hear about when it comes to some of the technology companies, some of the businesses that are out there. But within the South African context, it seems that there is this opportunity that is yet to be exploited. And of particular interest to me was the answer that was being given, this discussion around intellectual property, because in some universities, you can have an art student, for example. You do art, you create paintings, you draw, whatever work you produce, you're not allowed to sell it, and it's deemed to be the property of the university, for example. And things like that, I believe can hinder commercialization efforts or ideas from that point of view, because in some ways, like what Wayne was saying, you need to incentivize your owners, right? They can't be feeling like employees or people who are at the behest of an institution when it's their own effort, their own endeavor, their own startup. So that debate around intellectual property and the type of policies that different universities have on that front is going to be very important about how this space actually develops going forward. It's going to be the companies that are able to, it's going to be the companies that are able to foster a creative environment and actually provide people with the ability to have their own ideas. Sure, the university can have a piece, but the idea for ownership, I think that's going to be very important going forward. So that's been it for today. Thank you so much to Wayne and to Prof. Pretorius for joining us on this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. So that's been it. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller, together with Modiehi Mashemaete. I've been Mdiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.